This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Linda Kenyon in Washington. Cleaning up from that widespread destruction in Little Rock, Arkansas after a tornado that swept through the nation's midsection and parts of the southeast. CBS's Bradley Blackburn has the details.
Statewide, Arkansas officials confirmed multiple fatalities and dozens of injuries. Storms ripped through neighborhoods, trapping people in their homes. In Belvedere, Illinois, frantic moments inside a theater Friday night after the roof collapsed during a powerful storm. Hundreds of people were inside attending a concert. Dozens were injured, some severely, and officials confirmed at least one death.
Former President Donald Trump expected to be arraigned Tuesday in a criminal court in Manhattan. CBS's Robert Costa tells us the NYPD is ready for this first criminal prosecution of a sitting or a former president in U.S. history.
He will enter the building behind me. He will get fingerprinted. He will get a mugshot, and then he will have an open arraignment in court. The one thing he will not have are handcuffs on his wrists, because Secret Service will be alongside him at every turn.
The charges against the former president remain under seal until the arraignment. It is widely believed, though, that the indictment contains more than 30 counts that accuse Trump of falsifying business records during the 2016 campaign. Pope Francis is out of the hospital. CBS's Anna Matranga is in Rome.
A smiling Pope Francis was released from the hospital this morning after 3 days of intravenous antibiotics for bronchitis. As he left, the 86-year-old Pope got out of his car to chat with well-wishers and the media, laughing and joking, "I am still alive."
The Biden administration is appealing a court order that undercut insurance coverage for some common preventative care. CBS's Rob Legare has the story.
A federal judge in Texas earlier this week struck down a portion of the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare, that required most health insurance companies to pay for preventative screenings for cancer, diabetes, and HIV. The judge ruled the specific Obamacare mandates were, quote, unlawful and violated the Constitution. In announcing the appeal, a Justice Department spokesperson said for over a decade, the Affordable Care Act has ensured millions of Americans have access to critical preventative care.
Guess who's not coming to the coronation of King Charles?
President Biden will likely not join other world leaders for the coronation of King Charles III. According to the British newspaper The Telegraph, the president has turned down the invitation to witness King Charles getting crowned at Westminster Abbey next month due to prior commitments. Mr. Biden is instead expected to send a high-profile U.S. delegation, which could include First Lady Jill Biden, in a show of support for the new king.
CBS's Jeff Glore, and this is CBS News.
Streamline how you hire with Indeed. Their powerful hiring platform makes it easy to attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com/...
There is nothing better than squeaky Wisconsin cheese curds. Except maybe 3 hours of great Wisconsin radio. Extra sharp weekends on Civic Media and on the app.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Home heating bills in Wisconsin are going up this winter. Experts say there are steps you can take to reduce the impact. Mike Moen has more.
The Energy Information Administration predicts that Midwest households that rely on natural gas will spend an average of $1,000 on heating bills this winter. That's a 33% increase over last year. Whitney Hayes of the energy nonprofit Elevate agrees the region will see cost headaches in the coming months.
We're expecting gas prices to continue to go up this winter because of things like the war in Ukraine, and we're still doing a lot of recovery from COVID and shipping and supply shock and whatnot. So
she advises that small things such as making sure there's air sealing around windows and doors can produce savings on your bill. And energy experts say electric heat pumps have come down in price and are now more reliable in extremely cold weather. David Collada of the Citizens Utility Board agrees that heat pumps are a strong alternative to natural gas, but he stresses they still might be out of reach for low-income households and that policymakers need to offer more incentives to make them accessible to everyone. Meanwhile, he says maximizing these options will make a difference.
And if you take advantage of this program and then you'll seal cracks in windows and maybe install energy efficient light bulbs, all of that works together holistically.
For those worried about their heat being disconnected this winter, most Midwestern states have cold weather rules, which require utilities to offer a payment arrangement to avoid that scenario.
Budget billing programs don't save you money over the course of a year, but they smooth out your payments, so you pay less in the winter and more in the summer.
Mike Moen, Wisconsin News Connection.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell.
Direct from the Dairy State, it's Extra Sharp Weekends, a three-hour block of Wisconsin-produced radio, Saturdays and Sundays from 11 a.m. till 2 p.m., featuring Raised in Wisco with Joel Clayfish and Danielle Fairman, The Cripes Cast with Charlie Behrens, and Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown. Enjoy it by the slice or enjoy the whole darn block. Extra Sharp Weekends is radio so fresh, it squeaks. Listen in on the Civic Media Station or on the app.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Butler to Windlake, always streaming at waukradio.com. You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media. To learn more, go to our website, civicmedia.us.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Cripescast. This is the podcast where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest. I'm your host, Charlie Behrens, and we are brought to you by Jolly Good Soda. Hey, folks, welcome to the first live episode of the Cripescast that we've done. We're not currently live. We will be once we jump into this episode. But for the intro, I'm joined by Cripescast executive producer Colleen Maraca. Colleen, how you living? How we doing?
Good. Honestly, though, this is the first live, like, people can see us if you're on Spotify.
Oh, yeah. On Spotify, so you can watch. You can see what we look like.
Well, you already know what Charlie looks like, but if you've been dying to know what I look like,
ta-da!
Here it is.
Have a nice day. Is that what your shirt says?
Yeah.
That's what the sticker on the computer says.
It says be
too.
Happy. It's just like good reminders in the studio.
Yeah, it is good reminders. I like that.
Yeah, but it's good. And last night, we recorded the Cripescast Live with a former professor of mine. I don't know if, did you ever have?
I did not have Mike Wagner, no.
Yeah.
But did you get a good grade from him?
I did.
What'd you get?
I mean, I passed. So.
Okay. Setting the bar high.
But yeah, so that was our guest last night, was my old journalism professor. And
Mike is, he is an expert in basically, you know, this upcoming Supreme Court election. We wanted to find someone who was not partisan. Mike is very neutral and was very neutral in this interview, kind of, you know, gave both sides of the issue. So I know our listeners are on both sides of the aisle, and we really wanted to make this as, you know, informative as possible. And really the goal is just everybody gets out and votes between now and April 4th.
Yep.
Because it's always tough to remember, you know, we just got done with an election.
Mm-hmm. People, I feel like I'm always getting texts from someone like, hey, Colleen, time to vote in Wisconsin. I'm like, now
I
what?
I just voted.
For what?
Yeah.
Like, I'm confused.
Yeah.
And that's what he talks about in the interview, too. He gets into a lot of, like, great information about why it's different this time, the fact that it's in the spring, it's on an odd year. There's a lot of different things going into it.
And just to give you Mike's credentials, he is a professor at the School of Journalism, Mass Communications at the University of Wisconsin, which both Colleen and I graduated from.
Somehow,
you know, I actually graduated with, I won't say flying colors, but definitely driving colors.
Well,
that's a dad joke
that
for
was
you.
Good. I laughed.
She laughed, ladies and gentlemen. Look at that. Got a genuine laugh out of her. Usually they're pity laughs. Mike is also a PhD in political science, sciences from Indiana University. Worked in journalism and politics and all that sort of stuff.
He's also like doing research right now about elections and like how people. So he's very, very informed guy, very qualified. He goes into a lot of it. I felt like I learned a lot last night back in school again.
Yeah.
That's the great thing about the Cripescast is you have a lot of different people that come on that are more knowledgeable than you about a specific topic. And I think that's the point.
Yeah, everyone's more knowledgeable about pretty much every topic.
Respectfully?
But
I think it's good. He came in and really, I feel like a lot of people had a good time last night. There was laughs, there was aha moments.
Some tears, you know?
Yep. From who?
Me. Yeah. I was
from him when you were giving him crap about being a Vikings fan.
There you go. There it is. I did go in off the top on that. Yeah. And we filmed it at Comedy on State mm-hmm. in Madison. And all the proceeds went to Boys and Girls Club of Dane County, which is a great organization. And if anyone's interested, you can support there independently. But a big thanks to everybody who came out. And I had a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. So hopefully this will be the first of many live Cripes casts that we do. And yeah. honestly, I think we should just jump into it.
Sure. Okay.
That was her way of saying no.
Okay. No, that's totally fine.
But I just want to make sure everybody knows that if you are looking for where your voting location is or what to bring in terms of identification, just go to myvote.wi.gov, myvote.wi.gov. And with that, let's talk to Mike.
At this point, I want to invite my guest up here. Now, first of all, how many of you guys know when the Supreme Court election is? What day? April 4th. Okay, it's April 4th, so make sure you get out there and make sure you vote. Tell your friends to vote. I don't care if you're right, left, whatever. Just get out there and vote. That's how the whole democracy situation works. And to help me talk more about this, please welcome to the stage Mike Wagner, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, look at this. And he brings me up a beer. Oh, thank you very much, sir. Cheers. Okay, all right. There we go. I like that. Cheers. Thank you. So, Mike, how you doing?
Oh, you know, real good there.
Oh, you know. Okay, fantastic. I like that suit coat. I should have dressed better for the show, but that's okay. You're upstaging me already. We both got jeans on. That's nice. Black shoes. Should have worn a sport coat. Note taken. Now, I want to just let the audience know right off the top that you have allegiances to a team known as the Minnesota Vikings.
Guilty as charged.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, you can boo them louder. It's okay. It's okay. Yeah. That's all right. How does it feel to be a Vikings fan?
Pretty terrible most of the time,
does
to be
it?
Honest. Yeah. Yeah.
That makes me so happy.
Yeah.
Do you remember when you guys got Brett Favre?
I do.
And do you remember that one game when it looked like the Vikings were going to go to the Super Bowl for the first time in a long, long, really long time?
I do.
And they were playing the New Orleans Saints. And it was the last play of the game. And Brett Favre went back to pass.
He did.
And then he was looking. And he was looking, and he scrambled out of the pocket, typical Brett Favre stuff. And then, do you want to tell him what happened next, or should I?
I blacked out.
Blacked out, okay. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what happened. Yeah. He threw an interception.
That's right.
And I had the biggest smile I've had in a long, long time.
But, you know, right before that play, he counted up the number of people in the huddle incorrectly. There were 12 men in the huddle, which pushed them back further. They would have kicked a field goal. Couldn't, and then the crippling interception. So the Vikings always find an amazing way to lose.
Wow. Yeah. Give them a big round of applause for your support, ladies and gentlemen.
Raising my kids Packer fans so that they are
you are.
Happy. Yeah, I'd like them to be happy.
You like them to be happy, but you yourself, you don't think you're going to change allegiances?
No.
You know, Mike, I was doing a show recently in Minnesota, actually. I was doing a show at the this comedy club. It was basically the Mall of America. I was doing a show at the Mall of America because I don't know if you know this, but my career has really taken off.
It's where America shops, so.
It's where America shops, absolutely. Yeah. And the woman who, yeah, you haven't made it in comedy, though, until you're doing jokes next to a Rainforest Cafe. I'll tell you that. If your jokes aren't interrupted by, like, an every 10 minutes you hear a panther roar, then I don't know if you're really doing it right. But the woman who was working there, she was telling me all these facts about the Mall of America. And did you know that the Mall of America is so big, it can fit not one, not two, but three Viking stadiums inside the Mall of America? Isn't that amazing?
It is amazing.
And yet not one Viking Super Bowl trophy. What's that about?
Well, Yeah, that's true. There's no stadium that can handle a Viking Super Bowl trophy.
No, I know. Yeah. Okay, well, I can tell that this is now just bullying, and so I'm going to leave you alone. Actually, one more. She also told me that the Mall of America has the biggest saltwater aquarium in the entire United States, the biggest indoor saltwater aquarium in the United States. And I was like, where do you get all that saltwater in the Midwest? Tears of Vikings fans.
Yeah,
if she didn't. Yep. Home turf advantage. Sorry about that. Sorry.
They've been terrible my whole life, so it's not surprising. Yeah.
Yeah, and so has that affected you on an emotional level?
I think that my general orientation toward life is begin pessimistically.
Uh-huh.
Like a Vikings fan.
Yeah.
Something good happens and you think, well, maybe. Then more pessimism. Then a huge unearned surge of optimism.
Uh-huh.
And then crippling, shocking, devastating, memorable defeat. Yeah. So I'm doing great. I feel good.
Well, thank you so much for coming in today. And by the way, if you guys have questions for Mike after we ask a few, feel free. We'll get some audience questions about this upcoming Supreme Court election and all that sort of stuff. And we're just kind of going to get the deal. Now, can you give people like your background? What are your credentials? What brings you up here today?
Sure. So I'm a professor in the School of Journalism and Mass Communication here at UW. So I have a PhD in political science from Indiana University, a lesser red and white Big Ten school. And I, before that, worked as a journalist and worked in politics. And so I study politics. I used to be a reporter, and now I study how elections work and that sort of thing.
That's awesome. And elections, would you say in Wisconsin compared to, you know, other states, how is just the general state of democracy and just the state of access to voting and all that sort of stuff? What does that look like in Wisconsin compared to the rest of the country?
It's a mixed bag. So on the one hand, Wisconsin usually has one of the top two or three rates of voter turnout in the United States. So we turn out to vote in really high levels, which is very good. That's largely on the back of the rules that set up how we vote, which is you can register to vote on the same day. You can register to vote on election day in Wisconsin, which you can't do in most states. So that's why our voter turnout is higher. We also, though, make it harder to vote in some ways, so we have a more restrictive ID law. So those who like that say it's really important to push back against voter fraud and to say if you have a photo ID with your signature on it that's government issued that has a start date and an end date, we can be more confident that you're voting. And so it's a little bit harder for some people. Not everybody has a government issued photo ID, especially those that don't drive, and also seniors are less likely to have that. There are rollbacks the current state Supreme Court has done with respect to where you can vote. So in previous elections, you could vote in drop boxes. You could take your ballot to a drop box and vote early so you didn't have to leave work on a cold Tuesday and wait in line and vote. And so those things have changed. So it's a mixed bag. Some things are really good. Some things are a little bit more restrictive.
Got it. Now, with this current election, what are basically we have a divided court, is that correct? And then so this election is going to sort of tip the balance either to the left or to the right, is that correct?
So the current court has a one seat advantage for a more conservative judicial philosophy, and the position that's open is one of those conservative positions. So if the liberal candidate, who is Janet Protasiewicz, wins, then the balance would shift to a liberal advantage on the court. It would be a 4-3 liberal advantage. And if Dan Kelly wins, then it would remain the way that it is now.
And in Wisconsin, we obviously have a Democrat governor, a very Republican legislature. And what does that sort of say about Wisconsin, generally speaking, in terms of popular vote and sort of how districts vote or how it's been redistricted, how we've done the redistricting?
Yeah. So the way that our state district lines are drawn for our state legislative districts are in the history of the Republic, so in the history of our country since, you know, the 1790s, Wisconsin's state legislative districts are the eighth most gerrymandered in our country's history. And so how that manifests itself in elections is usually Democrats win somewhere in the neighborhood of 60% of votes for legislative offices in statewide elections, and Republicans usually get 60% of the seats. So Democrats usually win about 60% of the votes and get about 40% of the seats. Republicans usually win about 40% of the votes and get about 60% of the seats. Democrats say this is an obvious problem of gerrymandering and the way these district lines are drawn to goose the advantage for Republicans. Republicans say Democrats live in more concentrated areas, and so more of them are in some districts but not in others. And so if the state Supreme Court race goes to the advantage of the liberals, we would be very likely to see new cases coming before the state Supreme Court asking to throw out the current district maps and replace them with something that would be more in line with how the state votes in general statewide elections. So that's one way that this election could matter if it goes in one direction.
With that idea that the liberal voters are more concentrated in one area, does that, you know, and breaking that up into sort of these districts and everything, is that sort of what, like, I guess our founding fathers had in mind when they were talking about democracy and sort of like one vote, you know, one vote, each vote is equal determining the president or the governor or whatever it is. Were they planning on that kind of representation?
They generally favored the idea of one person. Well, they favored the idea of one man, one vote, one white man, really. One was how they were thinking about it.
Right.
And they were also thinking about it in terms of they didn't trust us to vote for president. They trusted us to vote for our state level officers and our the House of Representatives. With the founders, that's who they trusted us to vote for. And they thought that the districting would make it more likely that each of those voters would have equal weight, equal power in their vote when they cast a ballot. They didn't think about it in terms of parties. The first president, George Washington, whom you might have heard of, was a person who famously warned against forming political parties. Now, he's often praised for saying, oh, we should be worried about political parties and not do them. He also was the leader of the Federalist Party. And so, you know, a little bit from column A, a little bit from column B. But our founders didn't think that parties were very good, but felt that elections and a large country would push back on some of the negatives that parties can cause. People who study politics say, you know, we need parties to have democracy because we need to organize our ideas in some kind of way. And, you know, you get one more vote than the other side, you get all the seats. And so that it advantages us to have teams. But our founders didn't think that we would be in a situation like we are now, where people who supported one side were concentrated in one area and people who supported the other were more disparate. That's not something they envisioned.
And is there a way to sort of redistrict? And we'll get to sort of the issues at Bay, but I just want to touch on this redistricting just to give everybody an idea. Is there a way to redistrict in a way that's not partisan? If you look at Illinois, it's very gerrymandered toward the Democrats.
That's right.
You look at Wisconsin, very gerrymandered to favor the Republicans.
Right.
Is there a way to redistrict in a way that's nonpartisan? Is that possible?
It is possible, and some states do it. So not to praise Iowa, especially as a Minnesotan, but Iowa has a rule that says you can't cut a county into more than one district unless that county has more people in it than can be in a district. And so what happens in places like Wisconsin is they'll slice and dice literally almost by the house or by the neighborhood, where they'll say, you know, this neighborhood goes into one district and then we're going to put this neighborhood over in the other district. And so now people who live across the street from each other and might share a beer at their neighborhood block party are represented by different people. And usually that means that one of those neighbors is represented by someone who lives really far away and are probably getting less representation, you know, than and less attention from their lawmaker. And so having a nonpartisan system where neither political party or a governor doesn't get to decide and be the deciding vote for which way things go tends to make things more fair. If everybody has an equal number of votes, it's way harder to screw the other side. And then if you have rules about you can't cut counties, that the stronger rules also tend to make redistricting more fair. Now, even if we did those things in Wisconsin, like Democrats shouldn't get too excited. Even if we did, if we had a nonpartisan system and we didn't allow the splitting of counties, Republicans would still probably have an advantage, but it would be much smaller than the current one.
In Iowa, when they redistricted, did they favor the Republicans or the Democrats?
It doesn't really favor either party. In recent years, it's been better for Republicans as the state's grown a little bit more conservative, but you know, under the same system, Democrats have also had huge advantages in Iowa in years past.
Gotcha. So let's get to this year's election for Supreme Court. Before we talk about the candidates, is it typical for a state to have an election for Supreme Court justices?
It's not super common, and it's even less common to have it at a weird time of year like April in an odd-numbered year. And so it's we're fairly unique in that regard that we elect Supreme Court judges. That seems a little peculiar. Most states don't do that. And then we have it on an off-cycle election, which also means that turnout tends to be way lower, which is why something like this is a really good thing to do.
Got it. And so who are the candidates this year?
So the candidates are Janet Protasiewicz, who is the more liberal of the two candidates. She's a judge and has been speaking a lot about different sorts of fundamental views she has about rights she would like to enact her judicial philosophy in favor of, most notably reproductive rights is what she's really been campaigning on. And then Dan Kelly is the other candidate who was appointed by former Governor Walker as a state Supreme Court judge to fill a vacancy. And then when he ran to keep that seat, he lost in the last election to now Supreme Court Justice Jill Karofsky, and he's running again.
Got it. So we've got these two choices of candidates. What are the primary issues that this candidate, whether we elect a Kelly or Protasiewicz, what are the issues that they'd be likely to rule on in the near future?
So I would say the most likely would be something related to the abortion issue. And so Wisconsin has a law from 1849 that criminalizes abortion practice. And once Roe versus Wade in the 1970s became the federal decision from the U.S. Supreme Court and became the law of the land, that law then was kind of moot. It was inactive because federal courts reign over state courts. And so we had legal abortion in Wisconsin. And then when the United States Supreme Court overturned that decision, then the 1849 law restarted, reignited. And so now abortion's not legal in Wisconsin. And so it's very likely that our attorney general, who is a Democrat, or other more left-leaning lawyers would bring a case before the Wisconsin State Supreme Court to say that that 1849 law should not be something that should carry the legal weight. And basically the legal argument is Wisconsin has another rule that says if a law hasn't been used for a long period of time, then it's supposed to be sunset. And so they would argue, hey, from 1973 to 2022 or whatever it was, that 1849 law didn't count, so it should be gone anyway. We shouldn't have it. And so abortion should be legal in Wisconsin unless the legislature wants to pass a law that says it isn't and the governor signs it. And so that, of course, wouldn't happen in our current configuring of government. So if Protasiewicz wins, it's very likely a case would come before the state Supreme Court that would forecast would be most likely to reinstate legal abortion in Wisconsin. It would be the most likely outcome.
Now,
oh, and I guess I should say conversely, if Dan Kelly wins, then it's very unlikely that would even get brought to the court. Mm-hmm. We would just maintain the status quo would be the most likely outcome.
But the status quo with that law in particular, it does not make an exception for rape or incest. Is that correct?
That's the law doesn't really deal with those things.
Okay, so if those things were to come up, how would it likely be ruled if, say, Dan Kelly were to win?
It's hard to know for sure, but it would seem like there would not be exceptions. There are other conservative judges on the state Supreme Court who are sometimes behave as swing voters. And so you could imagine Justice Hagedorn siding with liberals in a case like that, but that's a lot of guesswork.
Got it. So we obviously have the abortion issue, which is a hot button issue. But what other issues would be brought up? I'm thinking specifically with gerrymandering.
Yeah, so I would imagine we'd see cases that would ask the court to throw out the current maps, saying that they are unfairly gerrymandered to advantage a political party, which historically the U.S. Supreme Court wasn't really a fan of, but more recently has become more relaxed about. And so we would probably see cases about asking to throw out our current state legislature maps. We would probably see lawsuits related to trying to expand voting rights, probably trying to reinstitute voting at ballot drop boxes. At the very least, I would suspect for disabled voters who have made a lot of noise about having a hard time voting in person in line on election day and had utilized drop boxes as a way to be able to vote. So you could imagine different kinds of voting rights would be something. I would imagine labor rights would also be raised. Now it's, 12 or so years ago when then Governor Walker signed Act 10, which ended public bargaining rights in Wisconsin. That's had a lot of twists and turns to the court system. I would imagine that it might be possible to see more lawsuits related to that again. And so labor, voting rights, abortion, probably some issues related to environmental regulation would come up. So the state Supreme Court, for example, the chair of the DNR, his term ended, refused to step down, said, I'm just going to stay. There was a lawsuit brought before the state Supreme Court. They said, you can stay. And so we would imagine that would go the other direction if Protasiewicz wins and wouldn't get brought back to the court if Kelly wins.
Got it. With respect to voting rights, sort of bringing that up again, what, like in Madison, there's all these different rulings with what IDs are acceptable and what are not. So this is just for people who are thinking of going out and voting on the day, especially students. In Madison, I think in all the other UW schools, you can use your student ID and it's an acceptable form of voting ID, I believe. But in Madison, it's different. Is that correct?
My understanding is that it's still different, but that you can get an ID that would be legal to vote, but it's not the student ID that gets you into the library or you're spending money on food and things like that. It would be a different ID that you can get from the UW, but isn't the same as the student ID.
But why would other universities be able to use their ID yet not in Madison?
So it depends on what information's on the ID.
Okay.
And so the voter ID requirement has a strict set of requirements about what has to be on there. And I think Madison's student ID doesn't meet all of those requirements. I think it might have to do with an expiration date and an address.
Okay. So if people want to make sure that they can vote in the election, what should they bring to be safe on the day?
Well, you can register to vote on election day by bringing proof of your address. And so if you Google something like, how do I vote in Wisconsin, or voting, something like that, you can go to the state's website and it'll tell you what exactly you can bring to make sure that you are legal to register to vote there. You basically just need proof of where it is that you live, and that it's in Wisconsin, that proof of residence.
Got it. And that website is myvote.wi.gov.
That's right.
I knew it was something like that. What about weed?
What about it, Charlie?
I don't know. I mean, I'm just asking. I'm asking for a friend. We kind of live in sort of this weed desert sort of in Wisconsin.
That's right.
And, which is ironic because we call our water fountains a bubbler here, And don't laugh that hard. Well, no. I can see those eyes. Do you think marijuana will have sort of make its way to the Supreme Court? Will this election sort of sway that one way or another?
I'm not sure that's the most likely thing to come of this. Now, the governor has been in favor of talking about legalization of marijuana, at least for medicinal purposes. And I think that there are lots of lawmakers in Wisconsin who
they're so committed to a round of applause at that. They're so trying to start it. I'm just looking for who isn't clapping at this point.
They're just staring at the ceiling because they're already high.
Yeah.
So Then there's quite a few lawmakers who are in favor of legalizing marijuana just more generally.
Democrats and Republicans.
Not many Republicans.
Okay.
Not really. But most importantly, the Speaker of the State Assembly is not interested in bringing the issue to a vote because it's very popular in Wisconsin, but most Republican lawmakers don't want it, and so it's very likely to not get on the legislative agenda because it would cause his party to take an unpopular and public vote that about an issue that some people really care about. But you could imagine a couple of scenarios where the governor might issue some kind of executive action that might try something that would then likely immediately get the courts involved, and then would work its way to the state Supreme Court, or even the Department of Health Service, DHS, might even try to, pursue some kind of action that might, even just to study legalization. You can imagine that those things might then make their way to the state Supreme Court. But it's probably not the kind of issue that's as likely to get immediate attention after the election.
Do you know why Republicans would be so opposed to marijuana? I'm talking from sort of an economic standpoint. You look at Illinois, there's sort of a windfall of taxes that they get from that. Michigan has the same thing. A lot of these Midwest states are finding a way to legalize it. What is the opposition, especially in a state where drinking and driving is so problematic and we have the worst... We really do. Like, when you come to drinking and driving, like here, if you get caught drinking and driving, you get a slap on the wrist. And now drinking or smoking and driving is not much better either. Are they seeing our drinking? How do we have such lax? Thank you so much. You're a real hero, honestly. Give her a big round of applause. Bringing the beers up. Jeez Louise. How can we be so lax on, as I get another beer delivered? I'm not driving tonight. How can we be so lax on sort of the beer laws, which is a psychoactive intoxicant, yet another psychoactive intoxicant we're so opposed to? What is behind that?
Well, I think the Tavern League and the power of restaurants and bars in the state in terms of their... how they earn political support is probably one reason.
Wait, why is the tavern... Do they think people are just going to get super high and watch Netflix and not go to the bars?
No, I think it's that they don't want
to... probably would happen.
I think it's probably more a worry about getting more regulation on drinking and driving. So, a quick side story. So, when I first got here to Wisconsin, this was three presidential elections ago. There was an attorney general's race, and I moderated a debate at the law school of the Democrats who wanted to be the attorney general candidate. And so one of the questions I asked them was, do any of you support, operating a car under the influence of alcohol to be something more than a misdemeanor? And these are the Democrat, none of them did. None of them would, right? So there's just the political culture in Wisconsin is not one that's likely to regulate alcohol, despite all the things we know about how bad drinking and driving is. And so, but your question was about Republicans and marijuana.
Well, true. But, I kind of want to ask the audience. I mean, you guys are general, hodgepodge of people. Do you think we should be more restrictive on drinking and driving? Let's hear applause for no. Vocal minority. I see how it is. All right. Well, that's American politics in a nutshell right there.
So the loudest voice gets a lot of attention. That's true in American politics.
You said it so great. Yeah, f*** you. That was great. You better go to confession, sir. It's Lent. Jeez Louise. Go on.
And so, but on the Republican side, really since Ronald Reagan was president, there's been a strong, like you might remember the former First Lady Nancy Reagan's Just Say No campaign, very aggressively opposing, using different kinds of drugs. And then there was, for a long time, there was a belief that using marijuana would be what's called a gateway drug. It would be first you use marijuana and then you begin using, which doesn't have much in the way of harmful effects. But then, maybe then you start trying something that's more addictive and more destructive, like cocaine or heroin or opiates. And we have a huge opioid crisis in our state. It's one of the worst in the country. And so I think some people believe that marijuana is a drug that is a gateway to these harder drugs that cause all kinds of really negative social problems. The research doesn't quite make that same case, but the connection between evidence and outcomes aren't always a high correlation in American politics.
Do you mean to tell me that in American politics, we are guided more by emotion than facts?
How dare you? Yes, yeah.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think emotion guides us? Because that's been the case for a number of years. Is it a recent thing?
I don't think it's a recent thing. And I think, you know, we need emotions to make decisions. People making decisions just based on cold hard facts tend not to lead to great outcomes either. It's the mixture.
People get bored and they fall asleep and they're like, oh, Jesus
Christ. And it's like, you can imagine the president, like there was an old Saturday Night Live with when Al Gore was running for president. It was like, all right, America, open up your textbooks to page 44. You know, like it's a little
That's
boring.
A great impression, by the way. Thank Look you. At that. Yeah. Yeah, and give him a big round of applause for that.
Thank you. And so, but we need emotions to make decisions. We don't need too much emotion to corrupt our view of things that are true, right? So, like, the way I explain it to students is, like, so let's watch a replay of a controversial play at a Badger game or a Packers game. And so let's imagine
Vikings game.
Well, but there are no Vikings fans in the crowd.
That's true.
In a class I'm teaching.
That better
here.
Be true.
And so, yeah. You know, so... So, you know, Jordan Love will say throws a pass to Aaron Jones, and did he get 2 feet in bounds or not? Right? Packer fans will say yes. Vikings fans will say no. Raiders fans will objectively tell you what happened, right? Because they don't have an interest in the outcome.
That's actually a terrible example with Raiders.
Raiders
fans.
Are bad.
They'll just mess with you.
As I said, Raiders, I realized I should have said, you know, 49ers fans or something, although they're probably high. So, you know, it's hard to know. So it's hard to know.
Hey folks, keep her moving to Civic Media every Saturday and Sunday at noon for the Cripescast with me, Charlie Behrens.
We've been out here all day. We've had 5 or 6 beers and only one fish.
CBS News Brief. Arkansas Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders in Little Rock this morning after a tornado swept through and claimed several lives in the state.
I've confirmed fatalities. We have a couple of others that have been reported, but we do not have confirmation from local law enforcement on the ground, and so awaiting that.
At least 24 people in the Little Rock area have been injured. Former President Trump has been indicted on charges alleging financial misdeeds. And then what happened?
I'm Stacey Lynn. In the 24 hours after the announcement of the indictment, Donald Trump's 2024 campaign says it received over $4 million in donations.
Trump is expected to appear in Manhattan criminal court Tuesday. The Biden administration is appealing a court order that undercuts insurance companies from cutting many common preventative medical care services.
Despite this week's ruling, experts say insurance companies are unlikely to immediately stop funding preventative care.
CBS's Rob Legarry, CBS News Brief. I'm Linda Kenyon.
On Tuesday, April 4th, we have a chance to elect people who will do the right thing for Wisconsin and for Waukesha. We need experienced leaders we can trust. Vote for Janet Protasiewicz for Supreme Court, Fred Stram for Waukesha County Circuit Court, and Diane Voigt for Waukesha School Board. Janet, Fred, Diane, because we can trust them. Vote on April 4th. Your vote and your voice matter.
Paid for by Blue Sky Waukesha.
And now, a special message from Charlie Behrens of the Cripescast.
How in the heck are you? It's me, Charlie, here to remind you that on April 4th, there's a huge election going on in Wisconsin. It's for the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Now, it's a divided court, so the winner of this election is going to help determine the future of Wisconsin. Be part of that decision. Go to myvote.wi.gov to figure out your polling location and also what ID to bring. Again, myvote.wi.gov. And watch for deer.
Accidents can be life-changing, no matter how careful you are. But with Gingras Thompson and Walks, you're not alone. For decades, they've been fighting for the rights of people just like you. They'll let you focus on your recovery while they handle the legal complexities. If you or a loved one has been hurt or killed due to someone else's negligence, contact them now. You may deserve compensation.
All in to win, Gingras Thompson and Walks, GTW.
Max Inc. Radio with Dennis Graham from Rockonson.
Appreciate all the support of Mad Radio 92.7. And by the way, a tip of the hat to Civic Media. That was a great article on the Cap Times by Paul Fanlon. You guys got a great model that you're growing around the state, local interest with radio stations throughout these different markets. And a tip of the hat, and you're focusing on local music and nobody's doing it. So great job.
Listen to Max Inc. Radio Saturday night, 6 to midnight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Hey there, folks. It's me, Charlie Behrens. You are listening to Civic Media, and this is my conversation with Mike Wagner.
Where were we?
So the nerdy term for it is motivated reasoning, which is that people tend to believe what they want to believe, even in the face of evidence that they're wrong, because it feels good to think that you're right. And that's a lot of how American politics works. We're motivated to believe in our side, even when evidence shows us that our side is wrong. And it's really hard to overcome that. It takes a lot of evidence. It takes evidence from sources that you trust. But we live in a society where we trust the news less. We trust our neighbors less. In surveys we do of Wisconsin voters, 63 or 4% say that they've stopped talking politics to a friend because they disagree, and 20% just say they've just ended the friendship. And so politics is affecting our lives.
It's brutal.
It is brutal. It's one in five of us. One in five people.
To hell with you, Grandma.
Right?
You know?
That's right. That's right. Not a sign of a healthy democracy where we just say, we disagree, so I guess we're done, right? I mean, that's one in five of us in our state say that. And it's partially because of this role of emotion versus evidence, and it's partially a reaction to society changing and people worried about losing what they have and seeing other people take resources. And politicians are more than happy to tell you who's to blame for your problems, and it's never you and it's never them. It's always someone else. And so that kind of toxic mix leads us to try to persuade people to turn out to vote for things like a state Supreme Court election.
Mm. Speaking of influencing people to turn out for an election, there's been more money spent on this Supreme Court election than there has, I believe, than any other Supreme Court election in the history of U.S. history.
That is correct. Illinois used to hold the record, and even adjusting for inflation, we outpace Illinois in spending for this race. Take that, Illinois. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Suck it. Jeez. Were you a big wrestling fan in the early 2000s? Oh, man. So that's good. I applaud it, you know. That's good stuff.
Yeah, but more than $30 million, I think, has been spent already. Most of it not by the candidates. So, like, Protasiewicz has raised well over $1 million. Kelly has raised $400,000 or $500,000 at least. Like, the last time they had to tell us how much. They've surely both raised more since. But, you know, I'm not sure if you're a math nut, but that doesn't equal $30 million. That's about $1.5 million or maybe two. So lots of money is coming in from all over the country trying to influence how we're voting. And it's never an ad that says, Janet Protasiewicz approaches legal decision-making like this, or Dan Kelly, approaches judicial philosophy in this way. It's, Janet Protasiewicz wishes that your children were dead. You know, like that's the sort of things.
The commercial.
That's right.
He just doxed himself. Jeez.
Well, we don't get paid. I'd say I need a little moonlight to make a little extra cash.
Yeah, you know, professor salary. Yeah, you got to get that voiceover work, right. You know?
That's right, that's right. Dan Kelly lets the air out of your tires at night, you know, that kind of stuff. Yeah, yeah.
I knew it was him this whole time.
Yeah, it's totally, yeah.
Dan Kelly never props up your wipers when there's icy rain outside. And then Protasiewicz doesn't open the door for you at the Quick Trip. She lets it slam in your frickin' face.
And then a gentle acoustic guitar begins playing, and then the other candidate comes out and they take the windshield wipers off. And like, oh, hi.
I'll even put a leech on your hook to catch a walleye. There you go. So, all this money, is money free speech? Is money free speech? Are corporations people?
The U.S. Supreme Court says yes. Other humans, I think, have a different reaction to that. Yeah.
You guys disagree.
Yeah. Yeah. So the law of the land is that corporations can spend money relatively relatively unregulated way. And the argument is that they have the same free speech rights as that you and I do. Mm. Many people, including but not quite a majority of the Supreme Court, disagree. But That's the current rule.
Okay. Well, that is interesting. Now, as far as recusing oneself from decision making, Protasiewicz says the Democratic Party gave her $2.5 million, something like that, right?
Early spending ads for her that
gave her a lot of money.
Yep.
And she said that she would likely recuse herself from rulings involving them. Dan Kelly did not take the same position. Is that correct?
But that's
again,
right.
Likely keyword.
Right. So one of the arguments being made in advertisements against Dan Kelly are that he's taken lots of donations for people that have come before him in court, and then he's ruled in favor of them in those cases. And so Protasiewicz has been criticizing him for that, but hasn't quite said, I won't sit and judge cases where a donor has given money. She said, I likely won't, which, is likely is doing a lot of work there. Yeah.
It's all about the modifiers. Is that a modifier? Can someone check me on that? Likely? I don't know. Is that a modifier?
Mm-hmm. Why not?
Okay. All right.
They gave me a second beer, so I'm losing my ability to make that judgment.
Forget. Thanks, Tavern League. At this point, first of all, do you have, before we open it up to audience questions, do you have any thing that you think I should have asked that I didn't ask?
That's the question we teach our students, of which you were one, they should always ask as a last question.
Yeah,
so that's a
it's
great
like,
question.
Can you just do my job for me here?
Right.
You know?
So why bother, right? Most of us will never meet a state Supreme Court judge. Most of us will not breathlessly read the decisions that they make. Why bother voting? Because it affects a wide variety of things that matter to all of us a great deal. No matter whether you're a Republican or a Democrat or an independent, or you think the whole system sucks and you would never join any of those groups. And so things happen related to what people get to do with their bodies, how they get to vote, how much of their money they get to keep and what the government can say about it, what happens to the government's ability to regulate or not regulate the environment. All of these things are huge decisions, and the state Supreme Court will make a lot of the decisions that affects what happens right here in Wisconsin, and we have a unique opportunity to actually have something to say about that. And on April 4th, we can let them know which philosophy we prefer more.
That's great. Yeah, give Mike a big round of applause. And I also want to thank all of you, before we open it up to audience questions, I want to thank all of you for coming out. All of the money you spent on the tickets, which I thank you for doing, that's all being donated to Boys and Girls Club of Dane County. So a big thanks to all of you for coming out and doing this. And with that, does anybody have a question that they would like to ask? Yeah, go ahead. Here, come on up. Come on up on stage. You can take my mic. It's sweaty.
All right. So after the primary, I think that Protasiewicz had as many or a little more votes than Doro and Kelly combined. And then, of course, there was Mitchell. So I feel like I'm a little overconfident about the outcome here, and I'm nervous about it. So what's going on with that?
That's a good question. I think a lot of liberals, especially in Dane County and Milwaukee County, have that same kind of view, right? So if you look back to the last state Supreme Court race, which is not a perfect analog to this one, but is reasonable, in that one, Dan Kelly won the primary by about 90,000 votes. And he lost the general to Jill Karofsky by like 150,000 or something like that. So this go-round, Protasiewicz did far better than Kelly. And if you add together Mitchell and Protasiewicz, who were the two left-leaning candidates, versus the two right-leaning candidates who were in the primary, the liberal candidates way outperformed the conservatives. And so if they improve by that much more in the general, then it should be an easy win for liberals. But these are low turnout races. This is a race in April of an odd-numbered year, which is not when anybody was taught there's an election when they were growing up in school. They were taught, it's the second Tuesday of November in presidential years. And so it's hard. People have a hard time remembering to show up for these sorts of things. And so I would say they're really, really hard to predict. And so evidence from the past suggests that the liberals should have a better time in this race, but it's not something you'd want to you wouldn't want your aunt to take that and lay down the money at a bookie's table on that. I wouldn't bet the farm on it.
Gotcha. Any other questions? Yeah, you want to come up here? Or you just want to yell it from over there?
I can yell it.
Okay, yell it.
Why is there so much solidarity amongst conservatives and yet progressives have such a difficulty in binding together to pass legislation?
Why do progressives eat their own?
Oh, this is a great question. So on a comedy stage, I'm going to begin a sentence with the academic research suggests, but I will, that conservatives tend to favor more absolutist points of view, and so it's easier to unify around absolutist points of view. Things are right or they are wrong. Liberals tend to prefer what researchers call consequentialist point of views. Well, under this circumstance it's right, but under this circumstance it's wrong, and so that gets it's a little bit harder to generate agreement, especially like excited, let's take to the streets agreement to what do we want this under these circumstances but not those, when do we want it well sometimes but not others, right? And so it's just harder, right, to make that kind of argument, right? And so part of it is that
that's a sketch right there, that's a bit.
You can have it, you can
down.
Have it,
yeah,
yeah. And so part of it is just like natural orientation to how we decide what's right and wrong. And part of it is that in the United States, the left-leaning party, the Democrats, are just more heterogeneous. There's more different kinds of people in the party, a wider age range, a way wider racial composition. And so there's just different preferences. And so it's harder to form a coalition that's motivated in the same direction on all points all the time.
I just had a two-pronged question, I guess. One is the forever chemicals in the water, stuff like that. How does that relate to this election? And then the election denial stuff, Trump coming
yeah.
back. And
okay,
that kind of
so on election denial, so our state Supreme Court held strong in the face of pretend things that weren't true that the former president said about the last election. And so the state Supreme Court held strong and said, no, the state of Wisconsin did a very good job at administering the election. Several subsequent studies and reports have come to that exact same conclusion. But it's very likely that we'll see more litigation in Wisconsin after the next presidential election. Why? Because we are ground zero for swing states, and they're usually presidential races are usually really close here. And so usually the losing side will want to try to engage in some kind of legal maneuver to advance their make it the most likely as possible that they can try to change the outcome. And so having a state Supreme Court that will weigh the evidence and not the ideology is probably no more critical than when deciding cases about elections. Like the minimum bar for democracy is the person who got more votes wins. And if we can't agree on that, we're in a lot of trouble. And so this race will certainly matter for that. Because we're very likely to see, you know, legal challenges to the next election. And then the forever chemicals question, you could imagine a few different ways that might matter in Wisconsin. So one might be if folks tried to engage in legal recourses to push back against frac sand mining or other behaviors that might make PFAS or CAFOs or other things in the water that are bad and stay there forever, you know, more likely to be there. And so there might, you know, be legal cases to try to regulate companies that engage in behaviors that make those chemicals more likely. Or there might be cases brought forth to just say, when a person's term in office in government ends and they don't leave, they have to leave, which is not currently the way things are in the state of Wisconsin. And so that's another way it would matter. That would probably, it's more of an indirect way it would matter for the environment. But since the DNR case was really the central case, as an example of that behavior, I would say those are probably the main ways that would come into play. As far as the state Supreme Court race goes. Lots of other stuff we could lobby our lawmakers about, but in the way the state Supreme Court, that's what I would suggest.
Do you think Trump will be indicted?
Nah.
you were asking him. Sorry. Go ahead.
I think that's as good of an answer as any. I think I don't know. Yeah, I think it's really hard to know the answer to that question. I don't think anybody's guess is any better than anybody else's. It seems like the attorney general is behaving in the way that you would behave if you were going to indict somebody. Super quiet, nothing being said, no leaks. That's what you would do if you're going to indict somebody who is that high profile. But you could just as easily come to the decision not to do so. And I think the case in New York, I think, is more more of a distraction. Like it's certainly a case where it looks, you know, from what we've read in the reporting, like a law might have been broken. But you know, I think it's really hard to predict. And I, as someone who thought there was no chance that Donald Trump could become president, became president, I've kind of gotten out of the Trump prediction business.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you all for coming out and supporting the Boys and Girls Club of Dane County. Thank you for this first live taping of the Craig.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.